Thank you for downloading this Hay Festivals podcast. For more information about the Hay Festivals globally and to access our archive, please visit hayfestival.org. Thank you.
The main approach was not to say, what are we going to do with Lohengrin? How can we be different? But what is Lohengrin? So we went right down all the time to find out. So it was for us, however long we talked beforehand, as much a discovery as for everyone else, to all the time finding what Lohengrin was about.
And what's that name? You used this phrase earlier, Anthony, you used it in the podcast on the Gosh.com's website, that each character four-dimensional creation.
Yes.
Presumably that means getting away exactly from the way I described it.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
The four, I mean, the cliche about Lohengrin, you see a cliche at the stage of Lohengrin, you have Lohengrin as blonde hero, because there is blonde, saving the day and being a knight of the grail and all that. You have Elsa as the virginal, the sacrificial victim in a way. You have Ortrud as the evil witch, and you have Tamerlan as the kind of in-between guy who's not sure whatever he's doing, opportunistic murder, basically. So those are the cliches. How different are those?
Well, the truth is, because there's been so much talk about Wagner, especially this week, very few people talk about the libretto. And not many composers write their own librettos, but he did. And these librettos are like Ibsen plays. I mean, I've worked on other librettos that are indeed very simplified, but these are extraordinarily detailed characters and very autobiographical. You can find Wagner, his sister, his mother, his stepfather, in Siegfried, the whole search for Siegfried, who he is, where he comes from. Wagner didn't know who his father was until he was 14. He was called Richard Geyer, which is the name of his stepfather, or, I believe, his father. I would love to find the DNA and work it out, and he'll become Richard Geyer. But it's fascinating, but his not knowing was so strongly in that. And here you've got Elsa, so reminiscent of his beloved sister. And in Lohengrin, his own sort of searching for Christianity, although at the same time, and because Wagner himself is so paradoxical, he kills off all the gods before Nietzsche even dares to say God is dead. And then deep down, he's in search in Christian as well. So I can go on. The marvels we can discover in this piece, and indeed in all his librettos, because I'm very much looking after the words, is a minefield. It's beautiful. It's very beautiful.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I mean, other specific autobiographical things that you find in Lohengrin, or that you think was working. And then Peter, if you feel the relationship with Wagner depressing when you're singing these pieces.
Well, Ortrud is very much his mother. Very much. He had a very complex relationship with his mother. And then they had this dream, because he was often sort of just sent away. And he had this dream as a little boy. He was going to get in a boat and go home. And his whole family would find this little boy in a boat arriving. And here it is, there's the swan arriving. So there's so much in it. It's very exciting finding it, yeah.
Just to be honest with you,
Nor is Ortrud. Because you can understand why she's so full of revenge. She's, her whole family was lost their power, and she's been in the woods alone, fretting and wanting to come back. So here we go.
Is this that sort of work, that sort of investigation of those connections? And can that be part of your interpretation,
or
even your performance when
you're
on stage?
Yeah, I suppose it must be, really, yes. Of course, we come, we're open, we listen, we have certain ideas. You read the libretto, you understand what's on the page, and then there's all this subtext, all this life, history that, yes, you pull into yourself, into your character. And, of course, I think, in a way, you've got to make something ring true in your body, in your voice, in your soul, in your... I mean, it's difficult to make an untruth, I think, if you don't connect with something, and we need to feel that flowing through our voices to a degree, I think.
Really?
Yes.
Do the talking. I don't know what I can add to that. I think that whatever you discover in the rehearsal room, it doesn't, you know, all of those things are incredible, and she's been our little oracle throughout it all. Another tidbit, another. But at the end of the day, you have to say what's on the page, and that is what you receive. And so whatever's been going on in the back of our heads and whatever intellectual discussion has gone on, you get what's on the page and what comes out of our mouths and our hearts. Yeah, the erosion of their love during this scene is just incredible. It's a fascinating study of what humans, what love, what can happen to you in this condition. That when conditions are put on love, eventually you have to pick away at it. And, you know, it doesn't have to be love, but there'll be so many situations where someone's put a condition on it and you think you can live with it. You know, in Act One, she just gives her all, absolutely there and then, and inevitably it's not going to work. Hugely efficient, yeah.
I wonder if any of you using the microphone, the grill, want to say thank you. And I want to say anything about Wagner, the musical that you picked up on the brilliance of the record, just how dramatically successful and succinct the music is.
The music, Lothar, where are you? I'm not quite sure. What is important, because I've had lots of discussions about this, that the words and the feelings, and therefore expressed in words, comes first, and then out of that comes the music. And so often people think it's the other way around. That's all I can say. The music is extraordinary. I mean,
Oh, no, I know it helps you incredibly, but I mean, I think it's. I think you probably know more, but he slightly dissed this opera later, didn't he? I mean, didn't he think it was a little bit too conventional? Yeah, and you can see. I mean, as you said, it's a seminal work because it's moving between one style and into something incredibly different, and. That I mean, Helen and I have worked on The Ring before this, and that was quite very, very interesting to come back to Lohengrin and to have these ensembles, which of course you don't get at all in The Ring. And so, in a strange way, it is a very strange work in that it's got these incredible scenes like the bedroom scene and the Ortrud Telramon scene, and then it's got these much more conventional moments, which make it quite difficult, I think. To direct in some ways.
You mean the heraldic? Yeah,
well, yes, I mean the big chorus scenes, and also the ensemble with six people in suspended time. I mean, which you associate much more with Italian opera and earlier opera, really.
Were the moments, or were the moments actually, I wish he'd cut this bit off sooner, or if this scene had been shorter, would work better dramatically, or anything.
Well, I remember, yeah.
After all, as you say, it's in a way, he thought it was a transitional piece, and he, as you say, repudiated some of the musical and dramatic forms in it. I mean, there were things where you thought, you know what,
No, I don't regret any of it. Actually, my only regret is that we don't do the whole score completely, that we've missed out. We've done the usual cut, you know, which is for Elsa at the end, you know, where she's sort of begging forgiveness. And I'm sorry, in a way, that we don't do that.
That's always done. Yeah,
I think Lothar, I mean, Isabel may know more. Did Lothar want to do it originally? You don't know. Yes, yeah. I think he said he did. I think it just makes... It's not that long. It's about, I don't know, 3-4 minutes maybe. But it's a pity we don't do it, because you miss some of...
A couple of pages of really high and hard singing for Elsa. Oh,
yeah, Emma, you'd have just done it wonderfully. Yeah, yeah. No. But it's a pity. But, I mean, it is incredible, because you've got that extraordinary prelude that really puts you in another place. I mean, it is amazing to sit through that and to listen to that, and it kind of brings down your sugar level or whatever it does, you know, and then you're open to this amazing story which happens. Well, he's a genius, that Mr. Wagner.
And indeed to Lohengrin, if you like. Having been through that journey where love has been opened up to him and he decides to renounce it. I mean, that makes you a very, very problematic person. I can understand the blonde hair. It is a bit sus, because it's that sort of thing about, you know, on one hand, you are in love with Elsa, and at the end, you're a sort of willful religious idealist who'd actually much rather fall in love with a cup than a woman. So to speak, you know. It's problematic how you, you know, that moment where you sing to Elsa,
clearly that's his identity, and I think, you know, sometimes I felt I'd got to get clear in my mind where he actually came from. Yeah. I mean, some people might think he's from another material world, whereas my personal view is more of a spiritual essence. It's more supernatural. And I think that's the thing, that playing this character is, the difficulty is being nothing, is being simple. So many characters you've got something to almost hide behind. But the nature of Lohengrin is, it's his purity. He's non-doing, I suppose, in a Buddhist sense, which you could talk later about Wagner, I suppose. But this for me, this essence of what you see later in Wagner's work, it is there already. And to be to present yourself, to present your body, shall we say, simply, is actually quite a challenge in some ways. For me personally, maybe for other singers, no. So, you know, for me, I just realised I'd got to simplify my head. And if I thought, well, if I was from a supernatural realm, we all come from essence, energy, whatever, quantum physics soup, whatever you think, or we all go back to that. And, you know, maybe he's got something he wants her to be a part of, to understand. And that's the great sadness that she, from my character's point of view, that she doesn't trust and believe him and...
There was in the prose draft which he wrote before the libretto, there wasn't actually a scene of all the knights of the Grail together sitting there quietly minding their own Grail business, and then they hear the cry of Elsa calling, and that was in the prose draft, and then the all the knights of the Grail, they could go to the earth and they to do good deeds, but there was one thing, and they were protected, they would never die, and they would not age, but there is a price to be paid for that, and the price was that they will never allowed to fall in love with a woman, except for Parsifal, of course. There's always an exception. Papa Parsifal had to procreate, but none of the other Grail Knights were allowed to. So that is very interesting. Now, why did he leave this scene out is the question. Because in the whole center, the center of this piece is an unknown, is a question. Why can't we ask the question? Why can't we ask the question? And I thought, why did he leave it out? And I think it's brilliant that he took it out, because we are left at the center, the most mysterious thing, this question, which life is. None of us know where we come from. We haven't got an idea what we are doing on this earth, and we have no idea what we're going to do after. So we are centrally always with questions. And that is the whole nature of this piece, a big question mark.
Parsifal is in a way holding a spiritual drama, and in a way Lohengrin, because Wagner is in between different kinds of operas, it's got a bigger contrast between a role of the court, the noise of the choir and the court and King Henry and everything else, and then that spiritual otherness of Lohengrin and Elsa's love. Actually, that's what this opera does, that none of the operas do quite so effectively.
Yeah, well, I think it was wonderful in the rehearsal one day when, you see, I think when Lohengrin arrives, he doesn't think that he's going to fall in love with Elsa. I think when she offers herself in this amazing way, I think there's a moment where he falls in love with her. And when Lothar said, when Lohengrin sings, "Ich liebe dich," it's the only place in Wagner where he ever says that. Nowhere else in Wagner is someone so direct. And I think that's very, very important, you know. I also think he probably left out a lot of the stuff about the fact that Lohengrin shouldn't fall in love with a woman, because we'd all think Lohengrin's a shit, you know, because how dare he do this, you know. Yeah. So I think that has to be slightly in the back room.
He
certainly was.
You've spoken at some length, and we've all enjoyed what you've said about the libretto and the music, both of which we all love, and that's why we go to see the opera. And the people last night, I'm sure, will say exactly the same, the people who went to see it last night. So why do directors and producers feel the need to change the settings that Wagner so very carefully laid out for these operas?
Were you there last night?
No.
You weren't, okay.
I've seen Lohengrin about 25 times, so it does. I can speak with a little bit of knowledge of the subject I'm trying to ask for. No. It's a simple question. Why do directors feel the need to tamper with the works of a genius?
Well, it's a very good question. I think you have to come to the piece and present it as truthfully as you can, and you can only use yourself. I mean, if you're an artist, which I think we all are, we have to bring ourselves. We have to present our own vision of what it is. And I personally couldn't really relate to 10th century knights. I just can't. I mean, maybe you'd say that's a lack of my imagination, but I have to present on stage something, a world in which I understand and can bring some sort of truth to. And I hope that we were honest into the libretto as much as we could be, but I'm afraid I just fall short of dressing people as knights. You know, in terms of what I do as a designer, and I do a lot, I tend to want to relate it somehow to worlds that we can recognise more readily, and I think that somehow I think it would be distanced in a way that we wouldn't be able to relate to quite so well. That would be my answer.
There is a very good Wagnerian precedent for this. Well, we know Wagner only produced the ring twice in his lifetime, once in 1876 and once in 1892. And in 1876, when he was directing the production himself, he was deeply dissatisfied with what the stage technology was doing. And he said to his coterie at the time, he said, Kinder, mach was Neues, children, do something new. So in a way, this Wagner himself, I'm not saying that gives interpretive license for absolutely everything. Well, clearly, you're searching for a kind of truth, different versions of truth. But anyway, I'm going along with what you were suggesting. Also, it would be equally damaging to say there's only one way.
The best way, in my view, is to follow exactly what Wagner wrote in his stage instructions and his general setting, and in the preview, the writing that described the Lohengrin play or the Parsifal, either of them. Related, as we all know, but it would be best to leave well alone, in my view.
That's all well and good, but just one quick example, and I have to move on to another question. If you see a stage description that says the gods process over a rainbow bridge to Valhalla, well, everyone in this audience, we don't have an idea of what that looks like. There will be many different visions of what that is. There are people that, even if you supposedly walk down the water, what the hell is a rainbow bridge?
Yeah, flooding, the Rhine flooding, and Valhalla going up in flames, and yeah, who's got the budget for that? Certainly not the WNO at the moment, sadly.
Anyway, more on this, it can come up afterwards. So there was a question up here, and then we was
a question. I would like the microphone.
Thank you.
Very good.
At the time, was killed in 1848 on the received a bullet in 1848 on the barricades.
Yeah.
Would Lohengrin be, as it said in the notes, a footnote of history and not as important as we now seem to describe it?
I don't know how to answer that.
Well, basically, it's true because that was actually Lohengrin was the end of an era. For Lohengrin, and it was actually, if you look afterwards at The Ring and everything which was written after the revolution, that is very new and broke a lot of taboos, and it was very different, and therefore he might have been a minor composer if he died then, definitely. He would not have been this groundbreaking innovator that he is known as now. You're absolutely right, yes.
I don't think he wrote for 5 or 6 years.
I would disagree with that in this sense. The Franz Liszt conducted the premiere of Lohengrin in Weimar in 1850, partly in homage to Goethe. Now, Liszt really wanted to write an Italian opera. He wanted to be the future of opera. When he saw the score of Lohengrin, he said, right, that is it. That is the future of opera. I'm not. And he never, ever thought about doing any music theatre after that. But he thought that in Lohengrin, Wagner had done it. So, I mean, I think Lohengrin would still have been, it would have probably been seen as the fulfillment of, let's say, the tradition from Weber. But it would still have been important, I think. There's a question here.
Fantastic, I thought it was last night. I thought your performances were absolutely tremendous. There was a wonderful stillness about your performance, which I thought was just incredible. But on the production side, first of all, where exactly were we with those sort of toilety tiles?
So say that again.
The toilety tiles.
We were in an industrial building in Antwerp.
Okay, right. Okay, I loved the way that it converted to the to the bridal scene and the walking through above. I thought that was just so effective. But I have to say, I was sitting in C row, I think it was. Can I just say something about sight lines here?
Of course you can. But what seat in C row? See, you mean very close to the front?
Yes.
Yes.
And there's this penchant now to have musical instruments all over the place. So we've got brass ensembles in various places.
Yes.
And there is actually one sort of cupboard to the left, stage right, where there was a drum, and I think there was a trumpeter in there at some point. But there were also brushes and I think a shelf and some other bits and pieces. And it's very difficult to suspend one's disbelief when you're looking at that. Does that sound right? I don't want to be. I thought it was fantastic, but I had to say that. I'm sorry.
Off stage musicians.
Off stage musicians.
Yes.
I could see.
Yeah.
Playing in a cleaning cupboard. And every time the musician went into the cleaning cupboard, they opened the curtain so the light came out from the corridor or whatever's behind the cleaning cupboard.
Well, I'm sorry.
I feel really awful.
You should ask for another ticket to sit.
Well, I actually had
don't
three...
Don't you think, Isabel?
I actually had three seats because I had a lady who couldn't keep her head still,
first of all. You can't complain if you had three seats.
Then I went, I went to another seat.
Three seats.
Three seats.
I think you should ask for another three
well,
seats.
I just thought it was worth mentioning because it is very
actually
difficult.
You're not the only I had someone else said to me there was a moment when and it was at a particularly tense moment on stage when musicians who were in the auditorium, their light came on and it was very distracting, but yeah. Yes, exactly. It was exactly the same place. I had the same note from somebody else.
Thank you.
I'm sorry about that.
I just want to lodge a personal protest. Welsh National Opera haven't performed Wagner in North Wales in the past 2 years, and I've had to travel a long way to Cardiff to see it.
I'm sorry. Can't you get a grant from the government? Yeah, no, I think it's because the scale of these productions is that they can only go to big theatres because we've got 72 chorus on stage and, you know...
Have they done Wagner before then?
Tristan did go a few years back.
Thank you, good. very Wagnerian setting, North Wales. If he'd been there, that would have been the place where he'd have wanted it. You know, because you know the original idea for the theatre. I'm sorry, you all know it, but you know the original idea for the Bayreuth Theatre. And he dreamt of this in Zurich was going to be a place where you could perform the Ring Cycle once and then burn the theatre around the world. Yeah, you put it on the lake, burn the theatre. We'd all be saving a lot of time. Anyway, yes, more.
No more protests? No.
12 minutes and 54 seconds here.
Yeah.
Maybe just finally to you all. Does it whet your appetite?
There is a question.
Was the swan meant to be a homoerotic thing?
Did you think so?
I did think Peter was rather all over the swan.
Say that you thought.
In what sense was I all over him? No. Yes, when I arrive and Lohengrin's arrival, I arrive, and there's a beautiful swan. Well, it's half boy, half
Gottfried.
Yes, but he's sort of he has the guise of a swan. He has the most stunning, beautiful costume with a wing of feathers, and he's quite very balletic, and he issues my arrival, and of course I'm very sad to see him go, because in actual fact I'm leaving my beautiful place, you know, the home of the Grail. This is where my sadness is, and he's been a dear friend, a spiritual guide, you might say.
Well, it was rather sexy.
Well, people say, but, you know, to be honest with you, I heard people mention this depending on orientation. I've got friends in the chorus that said, oh, my God, when he looked in your eyes, this young boy. And, and then I have other people saying, oh, you know, it was so fatherly. So I think, you know, it depends on your orientation, maybe, but it's a very beautiful moment.
It was lovely. Sure.
Very tender. No, well, exactly.
But I think it's also very interesting that he has this incredibly close relationship with Gottfried and has to let Gottfried go. Then he looks at the sister and falls in love. Yeah. So, I mean, there is, again, this unconnected.
No. Yes, I would say, I mean, brothers and sisters in Wagner are pretty close often. Well, yeah, and also, I would say at the very end, no one's asked us about the end who saw it, but, you know, when Gottfried comes back, you know, you've seen him as this beautiful swan, but actually, this is an incredibly sad opera, as you know, and in the very final moments, Gottfried is not so nice as you think he might be as the brother of Elsa. There's a feeling of, I hope there's a kind of ambiguous feeling that he might actually not use his power in a very good way. Yeah. You know, that.
So it is a deliberate thing. It's also the feeling of power corrupts. Yeah. So the moment he's got the sword, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts, absolutely.
Because he hears what Lohengrin says as the swan to Elsa about he's going to be given the ring. He takes the ring in this rather nasty way. He seems to have lost his love for his sister. Yeah.
Well, I think we're left with a slew of questions, but I sense they're all bubbling with, you know, a kind of seraphic halo above us all there. Ladies and gentlemen, I'll lead you to the rest of the Tempest. Thank you hugely for being here and giving up hugely for Anthony Helen.